This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This weekend wrestling, indies and international. I'm Pete, and of course I'm joined by Timothy. Timothy, man, how's it going?
Oh, going fantastic. Just finishing up a decent sized week. Me and you off air, we're talking about this time of year is rough on retail and healthcare, which I happen to be in. It's just a shitty time of year for that. And every time I feel like I'm completely caught up on wrestling, I just don't feel comfortable. Last weekend, I felt like I caught up and I had watched everything I meant to watch, and I'm sitting there thinking, and it's that weird time of year. You're trying to put together, you know, your Wrestler of the Year list. Maybe your We Don't Know Wrestling 100, as I was just on the podcast talking about that, and you just feel like, okay, what did I miss? What do I need to go back on? And that's kind of where I'm at. How about you, Pete?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, but I'm with you. It's just a busy week. I'm off tomorrow. I'm going to go to see Wrestle Circus, so I'm excited about that show. And I'll have a report about it the next time we do a podcast. Right now, I think we'll be up in the air if we do one next week because of it being Thanksgiving week. I'm not sure. I'll talk to you about that off air. See if we can maybe squeeze something in. I'm just not sure with our schedules right now. But we'll talk about it off air real quick. But hey, we have a whole lot to talk about. We have Ring of Honor TV. We have Lucha Underground with Aztec Warfare. We have CWF Mid-Atlantic, which had a killer main event. And we have Rev Pro Night 1, which we got rave reviews around the internet. A lot of interesting people's takes. And we'll see if ours line up with anybody online.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
But hey, let's open up with Ring of Honor, and they kind of start off with Adam Page and Fish. They're in the main event for the night, so they kind of have these, they're like, I don't want to say they're having dueling promos because that's not what they're doing, but they're kind of both doing promos, but they edit it where they're both kind of like how they blend together type of thing. So it actually was kind of cool and kind of worked pretty well to set the tone for the main event. What were any thoughts about those things or anything?
Yeah, they did this, it was a couple pay-per-views ago, and it was Bobby Fish, and I'm trying to remember who it was against, but it was another decent promo guy, and they did throughout the pay-per-view. No, because the Dalton Castle, all they did was show the ring thing where they're saying we used to be buddies or whatever. Or maybe it was Dalton Castle. You might be right.
Yeah,
it was. And it seems to work with Fish because his promo style lends itself to being compared straight up to other people's promos because he's very good at doing callbacks and stuff that seems to be referential to what the other guy has to say. So he's, you know, he comes across, he's got that Conor McGregor swagger. And it's really funny because he was really doing that before Conor was doing it. And obviously he wasn't the first person doing it. It was a take on a certain type of MMA fighter. It was guys like Chael Sonnen back then.
Conor, it's a known fact. He's Ric Flair. He's doing Ric Flair, yeah.
Yeah, but it's got that subtle kind of, there's something updated slightly about it, but it's definitely Ric Flair based. And it's, and the way it works, it works really well for these kind of heads up comparisons that they do. And even here on a mini feud for the pay-per-view or for the TV that's meant to be important, it works really well.
Yeah, agreed. And we open up with a six-man tag for the in the tournament, and we got the Addiction of Daniels, Kaz, and Kamitachi versus Ultimo Guerrero, Henechetico, and Okimura?
Okimura.
What were your thoughts here, man?
So I am officially doing the Ring of Honor weekly TV reviews over at Wrestling with Words. So if people want to go check out the written review also and have it as kind of a companion to the oral piece, they can do that. And so because I was doing that, I took an extra moment to look it up and I added everything together. This match has over 110 years or almost exactly 110 years of experience in it with all these guys. And it's like the lowest experienced guy is Kamitachi. That's still 6 years that he's been wrestling. Yeah, so it was kind of impressive, and it from start to finish, you see it. Everything here is done by real pros. I mean, these guys, even the little flubs that there are, they pick them up instantly. Everybody's in position. It felt very much like it could have been a trios match, kind of a mid-card level trios match on a CMLL kind of Arena Mexico show. Everybody's in their spot. Hechicero shows off just how well-rounded he is. He's got great striking, good power game. He's good on the mat. He doesn't show it off too much here, but it's just such a really amazingly well-rounded worker. And so meanwhile, then, because Ultimo Guerrero kind of leaves that base power game for Hechicero on his team, he picks up a little bit more high-flying than he normally does. I thought that was great. The Addiction, obviously not the spryest young chickens anymore, but they play their roles here very well as heels. And then you got Kamitachi picking up the work for his team, doing just crazy dives and taking insane spots and getting thrown around by Hechicero. So all in all, I thought that this was a good match, a nice mix of chemistry. All the guys, just like I said, complete pros. No one in here, it just comes across as anything less than just a very solid worker. And it ended up being like super fun opener and a great little match. I'd love to have seen like the full version because it's eye opening now that I've been to ROH TV. Originally, I didn't think about how much they edit it, but now that I went to a TV taping and then saw those matches on TV, I realized just how much they edit. So I'm like kind of thinking, oh, I wonder what this full match looked like.
Oh yeah, no, I've been to a few TV tapings too. I remember one of them was a Jay Lethal match, and live, I thought it was just terrible. I mean, it was just terrible. But once they cut it up and edited it, it just played out so much better on TV than it did live. That's what happens when you can edit stuff. But here, man, I really like this match. In the edited form, I gave it like 3.25 stars. I loved that rolling cradle by Hechicero. I know I'm mispronouncing his name. People can sue me. I loved Team CMML's triple team spots. Really, really, their cohesiveness was really spot on. And overall, I thought Team CMLL had really neat, cool spots that really kept the match really interesting and stuff. And they had a really funny. I think this is a lovely opener. Could have been a fun opener on a pay per view too.
I was gonna say the people can call you out for mispronouncing his name or whatever, but we're the only podcast on PTBN probably even talking about him. So hey, at least we're talking about him. We may call him by the wrong name, but at least we're talking about him at all.
Exactly. There we go. And then we have we got a little like Castle Cabana little vignette. And it looks like Cabana locked the boys up in the closet or something, or in the bathroom stall. I'm not exactly sure. What were your thoughts there?
Yeah, I thought that was a little goofy thing. I liked the beginning video, but I think my bigger problem is I thought it just feels kind of like throwing away the big match. They earned their title shot on pay-per-view,
yeah,
and then we're just kind of shown, hey, at a house show, they took their title shot at the end of an elimination eight-man tag, and I'm just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess. So, yeah, go ahead.
I actually liked this as a team. I mean, I thought Cabana and Castle had kind of cool chemistry together. But yeah, it just seems like, okay, yeah, it's like, why even bother? I don't mind, you know, enemy. I don't mind tag teams breaking up, but I don't like the purpose of putting them together to then separate them to get a feud out of it. I think that's lazy booking. I mean, we've seen it all over. I mean, Ring of Honor is not the only one guilty of this. We saw it with AJ Styles and Chris Jericho earlier, and here they're doing it here, it looks like. And I'm just not a fan of that type of book.
Sorry, I think you cut out at the end, or I thought you cut out, but you just said you're not a fan of that booking. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally agree. And the funny thing is that Castle and Cabana, despite everything else, have been really entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really impressive because the booking's bad. I'm not a huge fan of Colt Cabana. I make that very obvious, but
he's not one of my favorites either.
Yeah, but I've liked them teaming up, and I'm kind of like, I'm like, God, this booking is a disservice to both these guys having such natural charisma and really making this work.
Yeah, and I honestly thought this is the best thing you could do with Cabana. I know some people were disappointed because it felt like he had a big deal, but when he first came back. But I mean, I felt like that kind of ship sailed because that's not the direction they were going with. And so I kind of liked this for his character, but then I just think it's, again, it's like Ring of Honor just putting people in roles that they're just not good at. I mean, the Young Bucks as heels don't work. Adam Cole as a heel really doesn't work. Trying to get people to boo Colt Cabana, I think it's going to be hard. Do you see that? Do you see that working out?
No, I don't. Really don't. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's like, why? I mean, he's not. I mean, yeah, in real life, he might be. He's kind of an asshole. I mean, he's a money. He's a guy who just wants money. I mean, he's a, you know. But to actually put him, I mean, to just try to turn him heel, but you know what, 95% of the audience doesn't realize that he's just a money, he treats everyone like marks. He doesn't, 95% of the audience don't realize that, though, and they're not going to want to boo him, so and it's hard to be a, you know, kind of I'm putting air quotes, comedy wrestler and get booed. I mean, it's so hard. I just don't see it working out very well. But then we got a Castle Cabana versus Lee and Taylor match, and what were your thoughts here?
It felt like the Pretty Boy Killers were really toned down. Especially, it's kind of tough, I think, for ROH to do anything with them now, because you introduce them with this hot feud with War Machine, where they're just having this cutting edge, fucking amazing level big man flying around Haas, you know, hybrid Lucha Haas fights. And then you're going to turn around and, like, have a tag team match with Colt Cabana and Castle. You know what I mean? And it definitely feels like it's no matter what output they have now, it's a step back. And I'm almost kind of like, oh, geez, did they really kind of shoot themselves in the foot with this? That's not to say the match was bad, but it just felt like it was a subpar performance from them. I mean, their spots were great. I thought Cabana and Castle, as a team, look good. They get great reactions. They interplay together. They double teaming. They're working as a team. I think my only issue is that you're trying to tell this story about dissension between the ranks and issues, and it really felt tacked on. It felt like it was just kind of a regular tag match without the story, and then boom, at the end, he kicks him in the face, and, you know, oh, they mess each other up and they lose. And I was kind of like, if you're trying to tell me this story, I don't need to be beat over the head with it, but I do want to see winks and nods at it throughout the match.
Yeah.
And not just, oh, just the ending, you know, and that was my biggest problem.
Yeah, I'm with you. Overall, though, I did find it a fun match, but it was lacking in the actual storytelling, what they needed to do. And then we kind of get a Kingdom and Cole promo. Any thoughts on this?
I think the Kingdom Matt Taven, decent promo here. That was about my biggest takeaway. I'm excited for the Kingdom stuff, but, I mean, we'll see how it goes. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get Fish and Paige for the main event. Any hot takes here?
I couldn't say super hot takes. I liked the start. I liked Paige, you know, getting the jump on him before the bell. And then I thought it was a nice little wrinkle having Todd Sinclair call for the bell and say, oh, the match has started, even though they didn't get in the ring, just to cut off the chair attack. I thought that was nice because it's kind of like, yeah, you know, why do these heels always get away with this? I mean, I understand it in the concept of wrestling, but in this situation, Todd Sinclair is like, listen, you've been pulling this shit too much. I'm not going to let it happen when it's a title on the line situation. Bring the bell, match has started. You're just refusing to get in the ring. You're trying to slow down me starting the match just so that you can take advantage of it. It's not going to happen here. Especially you got the senior official doing it, so it all works for me in that regard. And then from there, I thought it was really good the way that they worked Paige on top. He's bringing that heat and that roughness that I used to love in Country Jack, with stuff he would do in the indies. Even some of the stuff he would do in the Revolt in PWX, I thought, he was in the Experience. Stuff like that, just like, he's coming across like a fucking asshole heel and kind of a badass, and he didn't used to at all in PWG, or not in PWG, in ROH come across that way. So excited for that, and then there's a big exploder off the apron to the floor, and I just thought that was the perfect spot for the cutoff, because it's like Bobby's working from underneath with the messed up ribs. He's this worn down champion who's possibly going to lose his belt at any moment, and he peels off this really big spot that felt like the biggest spot of the match. To really kind of cut him off and get his chance at a little bit of control. Then from there, he keeps control for a while until Paige is able to take back over with a shooting star headbutt, which is a stupid move for the most part, but I think it looks dumb still. It still looks dumb, but I think he placed it in the perfect spot here where it was like he's getting his ass kicked. It's a last-ditch effort of a flashy move, even though he's a heel, because it's a big risk to take, but it's so he can take back over control. I thought that was good. And then eventually, Bobby Fish locks in the heel hook. Again, I think Bobby Fish, I liked his style a lot more when he's focusing on the limb that he's going to end up winning the submission with. Yeah. Here, he's a lot less focused. He's more focused on selling the ribs and telling the story of being a kind of an injured champion who's on the verge of dropping that belt at any time. So I would have liked a little bit more legwork leading into the heel hook submission. But all in all, I thought it was a pretty good title defense match with kind of the opposite of the tag match. I think they did a great job of continuing the narrative throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that, especially on the Fish not having, not really being on point on going after the heel, even though, I mean, that's how he ends up winning the match. I enjoyed Paige's sneak attack. I really liked that from a heel, and I liked his focus on the back and the ribs, and I like whenever Fish was trying to make a comeback, I like how Paige went back to the rib and back area to cut him off. I really like that narrative there. But the only thing, I give it like a 2 3/4 star match. And I think part of the problem was the crowd still isn't buying Paige. I don't think they believed he was going to win. And then we got that type of reaction. It kind of got like a lukewarm reaction. And that's a problem with Paige in Ring of Honor. I mean, he's definitely a good worker. But it just doesn't seem like anyone ever thinks he's going to win a biggie match or anything.
Yeah, and that really comes down to the fact that he just hasn't. I mean, that's it. Like, they keep not having him win the big matches, so that's why the crowd doesn't ever expect him to win the big matches.
Yeah, I mean, he got some luck. I mean, he got pins on ACH and stuff, but everyone pinned ACH when he was working in Ring of Honor, so it really wasn't that big of a deal, you know?
And I mean, he loses almost every time to Jay Briscoe. He never won. He didn't win the tag belts when they were doing the decade stuff. That really felt like kind of a lost cause. They should have probably given him the belt at some point during that.
And they turn him face, and they turn him back heel really quick, so that doesn't help either.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's almost like the crowd doesn't even know what the hell, how to react to him at all, too. But, hey, let's move over. Overall, though, what do you think of the show? I mean, I enjoyed it for the most
part. Good
stuff. Yeah, I didn't think it was nothing was bad on the show. Nothing blew away either, you know. But I thought it was a real solid wrestling show.
I gave it in my overall out of 5 for the show. It was something like 2.6, 2.7 in that range. It's
sounds about fair.
Yeah, slightly above the middle. Good stuff for building to the big pay-per-view at the end, tacked on with the kind of Adam Cole's got to watch from all sides. He's got challengers coming from every direction thing. So I think it was definitely it had its misfires, but it also had some good stuff building towards the future. So all in all, can't complain.
Yep. Then we move over to Lucha Underground, and we had Morrison and Dario starts it off, and Morrison says pretty much that he's going to challenge. If he wins, he's the title. He's going to, either way, he's cashing in and going to go after it. If he doesn't win, he's going after the champion next week. So we'll have a title match next week. But pretty much it was Aztec Warfare. And, let's get right cut to the chase. I mean, I don't think the internet, 99% wanted Sexy Star to win. She wins. Christopher DeJoseph has been pretty immature on social media, going after people and bitching to people about not liking the story and what it was. I mean, bottom line, especially when you're facing with one of your monsters, it was just so bad. And you know what? Of all the females that they have, she's not even the most over female on the roster, or the best female on the roster by any stretch of the imagination. So, she's not the most over woman on the roster, and she's not the best woman on the roster. So why give her the belt? If you wanted to make a statement, you should have given it. I think, honestly, I probably would have given it to Eva Lise or even Taya, because I think that'd been an interesting dynamic with Morrison. But I wouldn't give it to either any of them, honestly. I thought it was this kind of a waste, and they kind of cheapened their big match in the Aztec Warfare by giving it to her. What were your thoughts on her winning it?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not her fault, but the match was subpar anyways. The way it was going, it really felt like it was dragging on. A lot of guys did a lot of cool stuff, but there was a lot of just kind of filler and bullshit in the match. And I felt like, as you're saying that, I was like, Eva Lise would make sense if you want to give it to a girl. You mentioned Taya. It hadn't crossed my mind at all, but the Worldwide Underground looked really great in this match, working as a unit. And if you have Taya come in late and, you know, her team all band together and somehow she just ends up being the one who comes out on top, it would have worked perfectly. And you're so right. And it would have been, like, way better and felt like it came out of nowhere. People would have been surprised it would have actually worked, because she's had decent matches at least.
Yeah.
At this point, Sexy Star was just, ugh. But, I mean, there was stuff in here that was good, as I said. But the problem was that it was all starting to come off campy and cheesy at times, where I'm just like, Jesus. Sami Callihan getting just like shit-canned early and easily dispatched by Matanza.
But with that said, I thought he made a statement early, and I thought he got himself over.
I could see that, but I thought he should have been a little bit more of a focus. It was interesting he was out so quick.
I will agree that it was a little quick, but I thought he got over well enough. I thought he got his character over, honestly. So that didn't bother me too much, that him getting eliminated, because I thought he carried the action for the early part of the match.
No, that's for sure. I can definitely see that, but it almost felt like he was in the undercard, which is, in some ways, they do a pretty good job of booking the Aztec Warfare, even this one, in booking it in a way where it feels like a show still, where it has different matches, instead of just being one big long match. It really did feel like there was the Sami Callihan portion in the beginning, that was kind of your opening match. Then you lead into the middle, where it's turning into the Matanza kind of destroying everybody thing. Then there's even a Worldwide Underground Trios match in the middle, where they're working as a team, you know, and that's like something you would see. And so I thought they did a really good job in that regard as well. But stuff like Mil Muertes, or I think it was it Matanza? Yeah, Matanza cleaning the ring so that he could go face-to-face with Marty the Moth, as if that was the big badass, you know, two big evil guys going to throw each other around thing. I was just like...
I agree with there, but I will also say they actually had a really good interaction, but I thought it cheapened Matanza's character, though.
Yes, they executed it well in practicality, but it felt really fucking weird to me to see that it was like Matanza's clearing the ring so that he can set up a big face-off, and it's with Marty the Moth.
Yeah, you're right. It was. I liked the segment, but it needed to be a different person, not fucking Marty the Moth. You know,
exactly.
Like it would have worked. It would have worked with Mill. It would have worked with John Morrison. It would have worked with Paige. Yeah, I mean, there were so many guys who could have worked with Ray. You know, just so many different, some of the big players, and they just kind of shit canned it. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing, the double pin, where Matanza and Mil Muertes are face to face at each other. I thought that looked great as well, as they're both pinning them and then turning to each other to then start kicking each other's ass. I thought that looked really cool, but it was a little campy and a little cheesy. But you know, if the match was going hot and heavy and it built to it and it felt authentic, that would be like the coolest thing ever. Here, it wasn't bad. But it wasn't everything it could have been because it just kind of, you know, the match just wasn't working.
And yeah, right. You know, yeah, that's what the match has been like throughout. Like, they had a lot of neat elements, but they just booked it wrong. Another example would be, I thought having the four ninja triad with the shimmer, not shimmer, but the stardom girls, I thought that was really neat, right? But they eliminated Pentagon Jr. And I don't know if you, I mean, I'm sure you noticed, but that kind of deflated, they popped for them, but totally deflated the crowd when Pentagon Jr. got eliminated by the four girls.
Yeah, and I know it's kind of keep him protected and build to something interesting with him, but it's also like, yeah, in this match, the crowd was excited for Pentagon, and it's just the way it works now. I mean, unfortunately, it's shit like that in the Rumble, where Daniel Bryan gets eliminated kind of cheaply by Bray Wyatt, where it's like the crowd doesn't go like, oh, fuck them for doing that. They just go like, oh, fuck the bookers for taking away the guy that I like.
Yep.
You know, and that's the problem. So it's just like, ugh, okay, you can't do cheap finishes. The crowds will almost accept kayfabe for real finishes.
Yeah.
Like, they'll go like, oh, it happened because he had to lose, because he lost. But when you do it and it's like, oh, they're doing this to protect him and it's kind of bullshit, the crowd kind of goes, oh, that sucks. That's just fake bullshit. And then, you know, going into the finish, that's the biggest problem, is that everything was almost perfect except for the fact the match just wasn't working.
Yeah.
So when you come down to just Mill and Sexy Star, it really is like, oh my God, it's the ultimate underdog against the biggest, evilest badass in the whole company. And it would totally work on paper. And I totally get why they did it, because on paper, it's like, this is great. This is how you do this. But in practicality, you're looking at it and you're just like, I don't give a fuck about this at all. Like, it's just not working. So it was kind of a bad move on their part to dig their heels in on something that was just a misstep, and it like I said, on paper should have worked, in execution it did not.
Yep. Another spot I loved was the Mill and Matanza, where we get like this pin and face off type of thing.
Yes.
Where they, when they both looked up right at each other, it was like, yes, that was a great moment. Matanza getting pinned. I loved how he went destroyed Ray afterwards. I thought that was a great way to build a big time match for them. But there were just so many missteps again, like we both discussed overall with the match, and too many flawed booking decisions where they were trying to be cute, you know. And this is why kind of Lucha Underground is kind of losing its heat. Last year at this time, going into WrestleMania, I mean, Lucha Underground was super hot, where people were really into it. It had a lot of buzz going. Now there's like absolutely no buzz whatsoever for the promotion, and a lot of it is because of little cutesy little booking things like we see here in Aztec Warfare.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move over to where we can see good booking. And we're going to look over at CWF Mid-Atlantic. I opened up with White Mike and Aspen Rose. Is that Aspen Rose?
Yeah, Aspen Rose.
Versus the Dirty Daddy and Christy Taylor. I just want to say... Chastity Taylor. Okay, yeah. Okay, my bad. I can't read my writing. White Mike, again, I've gushed over this guy the last few weeks when we've seen him. Do you think the crowd is going to go nuts when he eventually turns babyface? Because he's kind of like in that Jericho role right now. Obviously not as good looking, but he's so damn, not charismatic, but so damn entertaining right now. you're going to have to start cheering him because he's like a highlight of the show, and you're just loving the guy. Do you think he has a future as a babyface down the line?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He's got that, just that kind of sleazy, but you still like him thing, and he's so real. He just comes across completely believable. He's endearing, as you said, in... He can be that lovable loser while also kind of being underhanded and snidely. It's kind of perfect.
Yeah, I think eventually we're going to see some big guy beat the crap out of him, and he's going to become babyface, and I think he'll work well underneath fighting like a big man and stuff. But on to the match, I thought there was a lot of fun shtick here, and again, White Mike totally continues to impress me. What are your main takeaways from the match?
I thought they did a great job of using the mixed tag formula and not letting it break up the flow of the match. A lot of times that's a big issue where, you know, as soon as you tag, the other person from the other team has to come in as well. They did it in a way where when the other person came in, it still kind of felt like you're still having the same dynamic and the same flow of the match with the hot tags and the heat going on. I thought it was really fun seeing Aspen Rose pick up kind of scummy, underhanded tactics from White Mike because she's his tag team partner. So she's like kind of doing just little kind of heelish stuff and kind of being a little cocky, which I thought was great. I thought Dirty Daddy and Chastity looked really good. Chastity with this counter into a DDT. And then Dirty Daddy dropped to holding Aspen into a headbutt on Mike on the ground. I thought that was a great little double team spot. I thought it was a quick, painless mixed tag match. As I said, the losers kind of fight and argue afterwards, which is another good little thing to have in a match like this. So I thought, honestly, as far as mixed tags go, this is like in the upper level of mixed tags. Most mixed tags like this suck, and this one was not bad.
It was entertaining.
Exactly.
And then we got Ethan Sharp versus Mitch Connor. And I tweeted this out because I thought it was hilarious. Right, I'm watching Mitch Connor, and I'm thinking, God dang, he reminds me of the Crusher. And the next thing, those guys, the announcers, Stutz and Cecil, are going off about how they remind him of an AWA guy or a Dick the Bruiser. And I'm just laughing my ass off because we like came to the same conclusion pretty much at the right time. Same exact time. I wasn't a huge fan of the match, but what were your thoughts here?
I think it's still kind of interplaying with a Ethan Sharp getting taken more seriously kind of thing here. I thought Connor never felt like he was in any way in trouble, but Ethan Sharp did kind of man up and had good little strike exchanges with him here and there to show that he's not just going to, you know, not just running and hiding anymore, but he's definitely going to, like, take it at him. Mitch Connor is a pretty solid, like, dominant babyface, which is something that I've openly talked about not being a huge fan of. I think he does a pretty good job of it here. But yeah, I mean, a good amount of his shtick does definitely takes from Dick the Bruiser or the Crusher, as they said on commentary. Even mentioned that he models himself after that, so you could definitely see it here. But yeah, all in all, as I said, never felt like Connor was in danger, but it did feel like Sharp is at least trying to man up and stand toe-to-toe and not just take the easy way out. So that's interesting for story stuff going forward.
Cool. And then we got highlights of the Rising Generation League, which, you know, it's highlights. And then we got promos from Dirty Daddy. And who's he promoing with?
I think he's promoing... no, I don't even know.
Actually, okay,
I put that Daddy versus someone to set up the Rising Gen Finals. Oh, I don't know who he was wrestling, but he's taking on Kane Justice in the finals.
Okay, what do you think of the promo?
Promo was good. I don't know if Dirty Daddy is quite there yet to switch from the comedy to the money promo yet.
Yeah.
He's definitely trying, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm not by Dirty Daddy, really. He's hit or miss for me. And then we get a Brad Attitude promo. And Lee attacks Attitude, and we get this really great fun angle, fun piece of business, where you really want to see Attitude and Trevor Lee throw down. What do you think of the angle?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Trevor Lee coming out, he jumps him from behind, and big double stomp through the chair, and he's trying to rip Brad Attitude's clothes off, and I just thought it was great stuff, honestly, and it's... it's that heel comeuppance, and he even goes as far as, yeah, like the heel is running off in his underwear just to be even thoroughly embarrassed. So
humiliated,
yeah. Kinda perfect. Yeah, it's perfect stuff.
Yeah, good old school angle. I loved it. Which led into a Lee, Chet Sterling, Everett, and Mecca the Mercenary versus the All-Stars match. I really enjoyed this. What are your takeaways, man?
Yeah, it did such a good job of keeping the kind of all-star champions team just looking amazing. You've got one of the tag champs, the Ultra J champ, and then you've got the number one contender for the world title and the world champion on one team. And they all look fantastic. They work heat on one of the Russians early on. And then eventually they get control and take over. The heels take over on Sterling, which is the perfect guy to sell for everyone. His selling looks great here. They protect, I mean, Mecha Mercenary, just every time he comes in, he's a fucking difference changer, you know, a difference maker. The second Mecha Mercenary's in there, the tide completely changes every time. I love just how well they protect him as a big man. He's just this unstoppable force, so that's great. And the closing stretch was fantastic as they hit a big finisher parade on what was treated as obviously the weak link of the heel team the whole time. They all hit their finishers, but you get the champion gets the win with his trademark submission hold at the end. And, you know, it's like send the crowd home happy with your big baby face victory. And I just thought fantastic, like little – this is like that post-match trios tag, Matt, or the post-show trios tag on a Raw or something just to send the crowd home happy. It's so nice to see.
What, do you give it a star rating or anything?
You know what? I'm so bad. I'm slipping out of doing star ratings for any of the TV shows. I mean, if I was going to give this a star rating, I'm probably in the 3.25 to 3.5.
Okay, I went 4. I really liked it a lot. Okay. I loved the high energy to it. I thought the match was super heated. And I thought the crowd viewed this as a really big deal. And I loved the heat the heels got on Sterling. And the heels focusing on his back. I love that storytelling element. We get a hot tag and Mecha runs wild. Everett gets cut off and now he gets put in face. Now he's selling his ass off and they're beating the crap out of him. So we get a second face in peril, which we don't get that a lot. And I'm just loving it. And it was overall just an excellent match. I mean, we got some big dives and everything made sense and everyone looked good. And then we even have post-match. We get a nice piece of business with the All-Stars. And one of the All-Stars, which one was it? Do you remember?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
On the angle at the end, it was which all-star was it?
Oh, it was
Eaton. Got into it with Coach.
Walter Eaton. And okay. He was the one who was just coming back, who was a tag team partner of
Roy Wilkins,
and not really a member of the All-Stars. He was just kind of joining for this match.
Yeah, and I really like that. I like that, putting heat there, too. And I thought it was a nice piece of business because we don't know exactly where this is going to go. And I thought it was really handled really well. Overall, I thought it was another great, really killer show from CWF Mid-Atlantic and probably the best show on TV. What about you?
Oh yeah, for sure. I thought, as you said, that finish is great. They kind of leave you on a cliffhanger. He's telling Roy Wilkins why he's taking this guy's shit and kind of being his little lapdog. We used to be, you know, we used to run the show on our own. So yeah, I just thought all in all, this was great stuff. Again, good show. And as we said, you didn't really like the Dirty Daddy promo that much. I'm not super into it. I don't see it as a big time money promo, but it's like, it comes down to it. We said that every time with CWF, it's not really that much about the talent. They do have a few key pieces of talent that really shine, but they only shine so much because the strongest part of the show is the booking, the card placement, the editing, and the commentary.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. And we'll take a break right now and listen to what other excellent shows are on the Pro Wrestling Only Network.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And now we're going to be looking at the Revolution Pro Super Show that happened last week with a lot of New Japan talent. Chris Hero there also, along with a lot of the British talent. Man, overall, I thought they put on a pretty damn good show. What about you?
Yeah, it really felt like maybe the first or second Global Wars from Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
I don't know if you felt that, too. The first kind of joint shows that they were doing with New Japan,
yeah,
where it felt, like, novel and cool, and it felt like two different sets of stars facing off.
Yep.
And then now how the ROH thing has turned so muddled, it feels like just the New Japan guys facing off against different jobbers this week or something,
yeah,
that's not even, you know, and or, like, even the guys who feel like stars in ROH just feel like New Japan stars, too.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of, like, intermingling right now with Ring of Honor and New Japan, where they Ring of Honor is on New Japan shows. New Japan now is a lot more Ring of Honor shows. So it actually kind of muddies the water in a way. Well, this felt really fresh and stuff.
Yeah. So there was a lot of really cool novel stuff, a lot of matchups that I was very excited for. I don't think anything here underdelivered. But I do think that you had to be a realist. And I think some people see names, especially like British indies and even New Japan names, and like expect something bigger than what they're going to get,
yeah,
all the time from them. And they get really excited about the idea of these matchups and on paper, but they don't really think about like what it's really going to mean. And that was like my biggest issues. But all in all, I think it solidly delivered, and it definitely, as I said, felt special.
Oh, totally. And it opens up with Juice and Thunder Liger versus the villain, Marty Skrull. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, this was one of the ones where I think on paper this sounds like it could be an epic match, but in practicality, I think it ended up being a lot more subdued, or just not quite as good as it could have been. Instantly, as Skrull comes out and he's got this kind of cheap plastic dark Liger mask on to mock Jushin Thunder Liger, I think to myself and I go, this is the guy that won Bola this year. So
yeah,
that's really cool. He mocks Liger to start off, and I really love the fucking facial reaction from Jushin Liger's Mac at the mocking. He really looked like he's just like confused and a little bit pissed off.
Yeah.
And it's a mask, so I'm just like, God damn, Liger, you're so good. From there, Liger shows off his grappling, which I thought was good. Liger did everything he could for this guy. And I mean, Liger went out of his way to put Skrull over as much as he could. And so from the beginning, Liger shows off his grappling so that you go, oh, okay, Liger is a keen grappling wrestler. And then when you turn around and Skrull takes over on his arm and is working over his arm really solidly, you can buy into, well, shit, I mean, Liger showed us he's a really good grappling wrestler, so Skrull must be fucking amazing if he's able to dominate Liger so well on grappling here. Liger answers that by coming back with big dives, so I thought that was good. He's showing he's trying really hard. He's busting out the big guns, doing dives and stuff even, because he can't out-wrestle this guy. I thought some of the selling from Liger wasn't at his all-time epic levels like we were talking about earlier in the year. He was a little bit more subdued and not quite off the charts as he normally is. There's a tough compo kick by Liger that I think was perfectly timed but poorly executed, if that makes sense. He did it perfect in when it happened, but he didn't hit it as crisply as he normally does. And in some ways, that's an allegory for the entire match. I mean, everything was pretty well on point being put together, but wasn't done and executed as crisply and as perfectly as it could have been. Skrull catches a chicken wing off of a rolling cradle to get the submission here. As I said, I feel like Liger put a lot into trying to get Skrull over here, and I feel like Skrull didn't capitalize on it as much as he could have. And that does kind of bum me out, because there's certain guys who, when you give them a shot, they're always going to, especially a big shot, they're going to really knock it out of the park. And for me, I don't feel like Skrull has quite gotten to that level where every time he's given a big shot, he really knocks it out of the park. And I ended up giving this match 2.5 stars. I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't think it lived up to my expectations at all.
You think Skrull's kind of degressed this year?
Yes, actually. And that's the craziest part about it, is that I was kind of flying the Skrull flag for a long time and saying that I really liked him. And I felt like a lot of people were talking shit because he shouted chicken wing too much. And then as soon as he kept wrestling more, I kind of thought he's regressed, and then he's become more accepted by more fans. And yeah. I just kind of find it really odd. I'm like, you were saying you didn't like him back when he was better last year, and now you like him when he's not as good, and it's really kind of shocking to me.
I think part of it's because his charisma has. I think his charisma has gotten better, and his shtick has gotten better. Where as in a personality, and I think that's what's getting him endearing him to more fans. But I feel his work, his actual in-ring work, has digressed and stuff. He feels more like a territorial heel right now than probably anybody on the planet. He feels like a guy who should be working 1980s Memphis. And stuff.
That makes sense because I see him. I describe him as he's wrestling for moments, not for matches.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and that totally makes sense in a Memphis kind of thing because Memphis was a lot of big moments and not a lot of great wrestling.
I wouldn't say not a lot of great wrestling, but I will buy that it had a lot of great moments. I gave it 2.5 stars. Also, I was kind of watching this. I'm like, you know what would be really cool. If Liger came out as Flying Yamada, which would be a World of Sport reference, and then I'm like, I wonder. I know the Brits pride themselves on knowing their history, and a lot of them do, but I wonder if the audience, by and large, would have reacted to Flying Yamada at all, as in knowing what the hell he's doing. I liked Skrull playing. I liked him playing to the crowd. I like Skrull focusing on the arm for a bit, but that's the thing. Skrull kind of bounces back and forth, and he's never able to keep his narrative really strong. And it just seems like he, you know, when he's going in one direction, all of a sudden he'll make a left-hand turn or a U-turn, and it's like, what are you doing? My favorite moment of the whole entire match was when Liger was going for his palm strike, and Skrull. Does the finger break spot on it. I thought that was really cool, and I thought that was neat of Liger to kind of sacrifice one of his big moves to get Skrull spot over, which he does all the time. But yeah, I'm with you. I didn't think it was an incredible match by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought it was a solid opener. Then we got Shaw Samuels versus Hanma. What were your takeaways here?
I mean, Shaw Samuel works a heat here that's fine. Again, Hanma is okay, but it feels like a lot of the Japanese guys, not necessarily going through the motions, but they're not really turning it up as
much. Well, this is totally, Hanma formula.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it felt like, yeah, he's a little bit just kind of doing his thing. I mean, you can't blame him because, you know, this isn't their home crowd. They probably figure this is just ancillary on top of everything else kind of situation.
But to make matters worse, none of us really buy Samuels here in the role either, you know?
Yeah, and that's another big part of it is that I don't get behind Samuels, and it feels... This match feels like a fucking waste of the heat, and I called it out months back when he beat Moose. And I said, you know, I don't think he should win, and I was getting blowback from people trying to say, essentially, oh, you know, they're trying to put steam on him, and this is a big deal. Well, you know, look at this. They're not trying to put steam on him anymore. We have James Castle come out. You do a big ref bump, all this stuff, and it just all felt like window dressing because he loses anyways. And I'm kind of like, why put all that ref bump and all this other stuff to just have him lose, especially if supposedly they're getting behind him seriously as a big-time heel, and it just – I'm just kind of – annoyed by the whole thing. I gave it 2 stars. Both guys worked hard. They did their thing. I mean, actually, they didn't. Honestly, Shaw Samuels tried to work hard. Felt like Hanma was not, like I said, not. I'm not going to say phoning it in, but it didn't feel like Hanma was really going over the top. You got shitty booking at the end with the ref bump and James Castle that all leads to nothing because Hanma just wins with a big-time diving headbutt, and it's over. And at this point, I'm just... It's like, God, this show feels special, but it's not delivering in ring at all. So I'm just kind of worried at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you on the 2 stars, and I felt Hanma was definitely doing formula, and it was using more just, you know, going with his normal spots and stuff instead of really milking the drama. But also, Shaw Samuels, I think, was a replacement. He really wasn't the original guy who was booked in the match, so that probably has something to do with it, too. And then we get Nagata versus Dunn. I really liked this match, and I felt Nagata felt energized, which was the exact opposite talking point of what you were just saying. What do you make of the match?
Yeah, that's why I was going to say not all the Japanese guys seem to not bring it, but Right here, Nagata is it's for me. It felt like father and son, you know, teacher student kind of situation. And with Dunn's background training, you know, it was the Osaka Pro Dojo, but he definitely did that young boy thing, which is something that Nagata is very familiar with at this point, as he's running the New Japan Dojo. So he treated Dunn with the respect that he deserved. I think for his level, he didn't go over the top, but he also didn't treat him like he was not important. And I think that comes with, you know, like I said, his background, and that Nagata probably does respect Pete Dunne for being a British guy who did take the time to go to Japan and try to learn this wrestling. So he starts out, they're both very wary of each other. Dunne takes some cheap shots in the ropes. He's working, great match. Everything's pretty evenly contested. Nagata's got kind of counters for everything, but Dunn is still coming back. He's looking really impressive. Then towards the end, not to say it ruined the match for me, but it did kind of take me down a bit on the match, is that Pete Dunn was really kind of flagrantly cheating right in front of the ref, with no recourse from the ref. And that's a thing that I've always kind of praised Pete Dunn for being such a good heel about, is hiding that stuff and making it work and having a nice hybrid combination of being just such a good modern day heel. So for me, it was really kind of deflating to see him do that. And it did feel a little bit like at the very end, Nagata, after kind of getting beat up for a good amount of time, he just like decides to come back and wins, and he doesn't really kind of work into the win and earn the victory. It just feels like Pete Dunne blatantly cheats a bunch, and then Nagata just decides that the match is over and he wins. So it ended up knocking me down a bit to where I gave the match only 3.25 stars, but I if it was just the beginning half and then it's somehow a stronger finish, I think this match would have been closer to 4.
Yeah, I'm right with you. I gave it 3.25 also. I dug the mat work early. I love Dunne after the fingers. I'm loving Dunn here really well. I really liked him a lot here. I liked him on the arm. I thought Dunn's heat was really solid. I loved all of Nagata's. I thought Nagata's comeback was really great. And I loved the low-level drop kick and the suplexes. But it did lose a little bit of luster down the stretch, like you said, and took away from the match. But Nagata totally, the crowd viewed Nagata like a big deal. And he put in a performance like, whoa, wow, these guys are treating me like it's like 1996 Nagata or 1998 Nagata or 99 Nagata, you know, or 2001 Nagata. You're treating them like, yeah, like, you know, back in his heyday of the early 2000s, 99 to 2001, 2003 era Nagata, where he was really one of the better wrestlers in the world. And it was kind of fun to see. It's kind of caught, we kind of caught a lightning in a bottle in a way, and really showed Dunn, which I you got to give Dunn a lot of credit to being able to go with Nagata and not be intimidated, and really have a really strong match, especially a guy who's viewed as a cruiserweight like Dunn and stuff. Next match was Hiro and Ishii, which has gotten a lot of love online, almost too much love, if you ask me, and I liked the match a lot. What you make of the match?
Sickening levels of love for this match, I think. People ranting and raving about it like it's the greatest match ever.
I mean, we've heard a lot of stuff, and both of us are Hiro guys. I think we both have him as number one wrestler right now in the world, as in performances. Is that about right? Okay. The fact, hearing this, saying that this might have been like the greatest week ever of one single wrestler's performance, that's just crap, okay? Let's knock that off the board. Have you seen that talking point on Twitter, that this might have been the greatest week ever of a wrestler?
I mean, the 10 matches in 10 days thing and what I've seen so far feels possible. But I haven't seen the Shibata match yet. The Evolve stuff was good. This was almost great. It was very good. And I can't even think off the top of my head what the other matches are in the whole 10 matches in 10 days thing. Oh, it was a lot of stuff from the TPI, right. Which I mean, the TPI matches might be good, but from what I heard, part of it was beating up 15-year-old kids. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, but I think, yeah, the greatest week... this is why modern-day wrestling fandom is so fucking weird to me, though, is it's like... no one was ever talking about Ric Flair having the best week of his career.
And the part of it is because there's not the video footage isn't there, but I can tell right. you, from the handhelds throughout of Ric Flair's life, that guy didn't mail it in during the 80s, okay? That guy would goad. I can't imagine. I mean, that's just a bold statement. I mean, if you want to say it might have been the best week in wrestling this year, I can buy into that argument.
Easily.
But to of all time, that's a tough sell. To this guy here, you know.
And what about? I mean, you want to go even further back? What about Gotch wrestling matches that went for 3 or 4 days?
Yeah, you know
what I mean.
Yeah.
What about those matches? Because I'm a grapple fuck guy. I love grappling, right? So if you got Gotch and Hackenschmidt having a fucking 3-day match. I'm sorry, but that eats up a good chunk of that week, so that might be the best week in the history of wrestling as they wrestled for 72 hours or whatever it was. You know what I mean? So it's part of the way wrestling fandom is now, where people are trying to break down the minutes and the seconds and the minutiae to a point just because we have the technology to do it. And, I mean, I was on a podcast recently talking about the idea that you shouldn't even be watching wrestling on TV. Like, wrestling is not an art form that was built for rewatching later. It was built for watching live. You know, TV is fine, but the idea that you're going back and saying, hey, check out this match from 5 years ago, are you even supposed to be doing that? And so, like, the idea that you're talking about, is this the...
for my answer is yes, you can, but...
But you know my point.
Yeah, I totally do, yes.
Yeah, and I love watching older wrestling, but my point is, like, why the fuck are we talking about the best week in the history of wrestling? Yeah, is Chris Hero the best wrestler in 2016? Hands down, yes, he is to me.
Yeah,
is Chris Hero in that talk of upper echelon, you know, 10 to 15 greatest of all time? I mean, there's a good chance. But, like, why are we talking about, is this the best week in the history of wrestling? It's such a weird talking point.
Agreed. I totally agree. All right, well, let's get to the match. What are your thoughts, man?
Chris Hero, again, amazing. And a small detail that I pick up from here, because there's so much to this match that's done so well. In the beginning of the match, Chris Hero spends the entire time crouching, bending over, and really mitigating the size difference as much as he can. So that once Ishii has a chance to establish himself as a hard hitter and as a badass at Chris Hero's level, then you can buy into it. And I actually noticed that change in Chris Hero's posture throughout the match. In the beginning, he very much was trying to make sure and mitigate the height difference so that you couldn't tell as much that he was probably almost 2 feet taller than Ishii. So that once you could kind of buy him on Ishii's level, or Ishii on his level, then he was standing straight up. And I picked up on that and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's such a subtle detail that makes a huge difference, because it's hard always to kind of set aside the size difference and buy into a match with a guy that's just that much bigger. So I just thought that was great. The other side of it, I don't fucking care how many people say it's fine because it's Ishii. I don't buy into Chris Hero selling his hand from chopping the top of Ishii's head.
Oh, really? I liked it. Okay.
I just don't like it. I understand. I get it's Ishii and it's kind of campy and fun, but I would be totally fine with Ishii no-selling and kind of coming back at him. And even if it looked like Ishii was headbutting Chris Hero's hand while it was happening, but it looked like Ishii was just standing there and Chris Hero was chopping him and then selling. And I kind of just – it kind of ruined it for me. And I felt like it could have just been done a lot better to make it work. And for me in that moment, it felt cartoony and kind of just – I just wasn't into it. And then Ishii completely no-sells a pile driver, the second pile driver that he takes. And I get what they're trying to do, but I wish it would have registered, at least. But Ishii
I disagree there with you. Now, when he does it with Shibata and Shibata just looks at him, that bothers me. Here, Hero's facial puts over this move, and it made the move, it made him mean something, because his utter look of shock of Ishii no-selling the pile driver, getting up on his gotch pile driver, from the pile driver, I thought it was a great moment. And now if pops up and a hero doesn't register or react to it, then it's just crap. And that's what happens with a lot of the Ishii Shibata matches. These guys are popping up from big moves, and they're just not... making the moments mean anything. Here, I thought Hiro did everything humanly possible to make the spot mean something, and made it mean a lot. So I thought Hiro's facial here made the spot, got it over.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from, because yeah, in the Shibata Ishii matches, they kind of are no selling to then rush to the next spot. Here, yeah. Hiro reacted like it's Jason coming out of the lake.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, thought
yeah.
you were dead.
Yeah. Great example. That's exactly his face, how his face looked. It was like he thought he saw Jason coming out of freaking Camp Crystal Lake.
Exactly. And I totally can see that. And he hits a quick elbow and then another pile driver and boom, it's over. As I said, a lot of stuff that I thought was great. A couple things that kind of weren't my thing. All in all, still gave it 4 stars. So, I mean, I didn't hate it. Obviously, I really enjoyed it. I just think... people talking about this as match of the year and the greatest week ever in the history, it's kind of like, no, I mean, this match was good. It was really good. And he took a guy who I'm not a huge fan of and had one of his best matches. So I can't argue with Chris Hero being great, but I think there is a bit of hyperbole. And it feels weird saying that about the guy that I am saying is my wrestler of the year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. And you know what? And here we go again. We give each other... I think we've agreed on every single star rating, and we're here again, 4 stars. I like the hard hitting here, and I enjoyed Hiro hurting his hand on Ishii's head. I like that type of stuff. I loved Hiro's. I loved the whole Hiro's looking his face, his whole facial of Ishii getting up and the pile driver. Absolutely loved it. But yeah, it definitely felt like a war. But nothing, I didn't think it was anything, like, so amazing. I think it was two guys who looked like they were hitting each other really hard, and they had a battle. And so for me, it's hard to get it. I mean, I still didn't think that it was, like, a great narrative going on. It was two guys just hitting the crap out of each other. I didn't see a gigantic story arc that puts it over the top as, like, a match of the year contender or anything. But nonetheless, it was an excellent match. And then we move over to Ospreay and Bushi. Well, what do you think of the match?
It's funny because, like, in some ways, this is the most New Japan match of the show. But it's also, like, feels special, obviously, for the UK and RPW specifically because Ospreay is their boy. And I thought they did a good job. I think Ospreay early mocks Ingobernable's pose, and that was like his only chance in the match to ruin being a babyface. So it was good, because from there, Bushi really stays on him, works a solid heel kind of thing, choking him with the shirt, keeping the heat on him, comes across like an asshole, and Ospreay never gets the chance to do that cocky prick bullshit that kind of ruins his babyface shine here
at any point. I'm with you totally on this.
Yeah, so I thought, great job from Bushi, really, you know, hogging up the heat and not really letting Ospreay come across bad.
And his heat I also liked that was focused on the neck, like with the shirt and the headlocks and the DDT on the apron. All these little things that, you know, lend credence to working over Ospreay's neck.
Yeah, I thought they did a better job here with the finish, having the miss with the referee and attempting low blows and black sides and all this stuff. Where if they hadn't done a similar, you know, kind of ref bump and interference and everything just to have the cheater lose anyways earlier, I would have been kind of fine with it here. But having it twice in the same show did kind of annoy me, but I thought that they did a much better job here making it work as Bushi throws a big slap to Ishii Bushi.
Like me, yeah.
Yeah, Bushi.
He also called him Kushida a second ago, too.
I am losing it. So Bushi slaps the shit out of Ospreay, and that fires him up to the point where he
comes at him, hits the big random maker, looks for the or the 630 kick and the Aus Cutter and gets the win. And as I said, they did a good job of mitigating the missed and interference cheating and ref, you know, interaction and all that stuff by having just the way it worked out, where Ospreay felt like a conquering babyface who was like getting super fired up from being treated badly. And I just, because it happened twice on the same show, it was annoying. But if it was just this one, it would have been perfectly fine. And I ended up giving this match 3 stars even. I thought it was really good, and they did a great job. But, I mean, you talk about people who have kind of fallen back a bit, and Ospreay, I think, is on the kind of on the top of that list as a guy who 2015, early 2016, was looking like a, you know, top-level prospect by the end of the year, and now we're coming to the end of it, and he feels almost like an afterthought.
You think he's kind of bought into his press, and now he's kind of turned into, I don't want to say a prima donna, but kind of turned into a prick, or believing his hype?
Or and he's just not, he's feeling like he doesn't have to work as hard. He's not as humble.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I can totally see that.
Yeah, I love, and then I've thought I'm with you the whole way. I liked this a little bit more than you. I gave it 3.5. I really did love that missed low blow. I thought it was a great near fall. And I dug the code red on Ospreay's neck again by Ibushi. I really thought Ibushi was really good at working over the neck and really followed through on the narrative of the match. Next up was the 6-man tag with Naito, Evil, and Sonata versus Star, Bates, and Trent Seven. What did you make of this match?
I actually really enjoyed it, and I didn't think I was going to when it was starting. I kind of felt like it was a weird match to have booked as a 6-man kind of in the death spot. But I think they strongly delivered here. Naito refusing to lock up in the beginning was just kind of perfect, as it plays up the character in whatever everyone wants to see. The match starts out with a mixture of athleticism and lighthearted kind of joking around, which is also good because you're not trying to compete with the match before it. I think that they probably expected for the UK crowd that no matter, even though it was Bushi, that, you know, Ospreay would get a huge reaction from the crowd and have a super hot match. I felt like it wasn't quite to that level where they needed a cool down match, but this was the perfect cool down match in a way. It starts out kind of jokey and light. You hit the spots everyone wants to see. Then you go into the finish, and the finish is really just kind of completely breaks down with no tags, and it's just a clusterfuck of spots, but a lot of good spots. I thought Star looks great as he's taking a beating and just kind of selling and bumping around for everyone. He's taking triple and double teams. And just looks like he gets just completely destroyed by the STO for the pin. And I ended up giving it 3 stars. I thought it was like, it ended up being kind of a diamond in the rough that I think it was meant, as I said, to just kind of be cool down in between main events, and ended up being kind of its own interesting little thing.
Yeah, I think I might be the person online who hated this match the most out of everybody, because it seemed like got universally solid reviews, and I found it really boring. I thought were really actively lazy here, and we're just doing their token spots. I didn't buy the Brits out of having a chance, Snowball's chance in hell of winning. I felt the Japanese team is like a superstar trio group, and the Mustache Mountain is not. And then to top it off, they draw a mustache on what's his name. And was it
David Starr?
Star? I thought that looked totally ridiculous. It did not resonate with me at all. Give it 1.5 stars. Just did absolutely nothing for me. But then we get to Zack Sabre Jr. and Shibata. What did you make of the main event?
As I was watching this match, I legitimately thought, like, I remembered the first match being so much better. And I was just like, God, this match was better the first time. I remember really enjoying it. And there was just something about this that felt like I didn't like it that much. And then I went back and looked at my notes and my star rating from the other match, and I was pretty damn close. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't actually that far off, but it felt like it was a lot far off. Sabre working over the shoulder and the arm as pretty clearly a heel just has a totally different feeling. As you know, last time they met up, he was completely babyface. Here, the crowd is just seemingly not into him at all. They're booing him as he comes out. He's working more more aggressive. I guess ruthless would be maybe a far stretch, but he's definitely being a lot more aggressive on his work on the shoulder. And Shibata coming from underneath, and when he does get his big comebacks, he's, you know, with these big kicks and big strikes, and what he can get looks good as he's being very tenacious. And it almost, in some ways, the structure works better for Shibata and worse for Sabre. And that's what kind of makes the match, I guess, not feel as good. And then from there, they kind of go into it as Shibata is repeatedly countering and blocking the European clutch, which I thought was just a great little spot, as it shows Shibata is very aware of the dangers of that hold and that pinning combination that Sabre gets so many wins with. So I thought that was very cool that it shows just kind of where he's at. And then Zack Sabre hitting the big bloody Sunday and the penalty kick, only to have Shibata kick out. And I thought that was really interesting and just kind of huge, as from there it seemed like Sabre should have, on the kick out, stayed focused and gone after that shoulder more and maybe some arm locks. Instead, he seems to kind of slightly lollygag and go for a slap battle with him. He doesn't seem quite ready to go, as I think he thought that was his biggest shot and he was going to put him away. And Shibata takes advantage of him from there and gets the sleeper on, boom, penalty kick, and it's over. And I thought it was really interesting the way that they told the story, as it was Sabre as a heel. He's ruthlessly going after the shoulder in the beginning, but completely loses focus at the end, and it costs him big time. And I gave this 3 3/4, and as I said, when I went back and looked at it, that's what I gave their last match as well. So it's very odd to me that I didn't feel like I liked this as much, but on paper, I did.
See, that I'm with, totally disagreeing here. I like this better than the other match. I give the other match, I believe, 3.5. Here, I gave this one 4.25. I loved the grappling early on. I loved how the grappling really became really athletic. I loved Shibata. I love Sabre Jr. going after Shibata's arm and the shoulder. And I thought Shibata was selling it big. He got away from it a little bit, but you know what? When push came to shove and down the stretch, you know what Zack Sabre Jr. does? He headbutts the shoulder to try to get to go back to the advantage. I love that. I thought it was really nasty of him. I love seeing Shibata work from underneath, because it makes his offense even more special, because we're not seeing him he's not throwing the whole enchilada at you. He's getting it in spots. It makes it seem more exciting. And I loved the whole finishing run, which I thought was just tremendous wrestling and just a tremendous finish to the match. Give 4.25. That was a low-level match of the year contender. I thought they really clicked here, and I liked Sabre Jr. turning on his countrymen and going full-fledged heel here. And Shibata, the crowd was all behind him. I thought it was a really good babyface performance from Shibata. I much rather see this Shibata than exchanging big moves with Ishii and popping up on no-selling stuff than what we got here, which was a guy who sold, and the people ended up caring about him because of it. Good match overall, man. Again, good show. Really can't complain about it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about them, number one, having Shibata as the Japanese foreign star being the babyface, and I mean the guy who's draped in the kind of British flag being the heel, as his jacket even has, or I don't think it does anymore, but he still wears the UK colors pretty prominently, being the heel, and ending your big kind of Japanese or New Japan co-promoted show with a New Japan star winning the title. Does it worry you with the kind of the talking point about ROH kind of neutering all of their own stars for New Japan? Or do you feel like it was pretty well done? And again, what do you think about the dynamic of the UK star being the heel and the Japanese star being the face?
I think it works, because Zack Sabre Jr. is also moving to the States. So I think that actually, if you want to go with that part of the story, makes me a natural heel to the UK.
Okay.
I mean, I mean, we all know the UK. I mean, there's a lot of pride in that in the UK, and deservedly so. Having Zack Sabre Jr. move to the United States, I think a lot of UK grapple guys will kind of take that as a slap in the face.
Okay, and what about putting the title on Shibata?
I think it's a good idea for a while. I mean, they did it with AJ. I think they like having it defended, and like part of the deal of which I read in the Observer is that Shibata will defend it on Japan shows, so it makes the title seem more important when it's getting defended worldwide.
Do you feel like RPW is at that level? Because as you say that, I think about a New Japan, a Dome show with a ROH world title and a RPW world title match happening on that show. Like, ROH, in some ways, it makes sense to me. They feel that big. But do you think RPW is at that level where it makes sense to have RPW world title defended on the Tokyo Dome show?
I don't think so. But, I mean, it's a way to – I mean, for them, I think it's a way to get them in the game. So if I'm Revolution – if I'm RPW, I think it's a win for them.
Yeah, that's for sure. Overall, for me, I thought the show – well, obviously, it leaves me with some questions.
What about you? What about your thoughts on your questions? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, Shibata doesn't feel like the right guy to put the belt on based on New Japan booking.
Right.
He just dropped the NEVER title to Evil, who was also on this show and kind of just in the comedy – not even comedy, but in the cool-down trios match.
Well, he just got it back.
Oh, did he already pick it back up?
Yeah, he won it on the tour they just did of
Taiwan.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess if he's got the NEVER title back, then that's fine. But I just feel like Shibata's not treated like a guy that you should be putting your title on. When they put the belt on AJ was, you know, at that level of the top guy.
Oh yeah, agreed.
So it feels like a step down in that way. I didn't really think about Sabre moving, you know, obviously to America as a thing to make him heel. It felt like he was turning heel to the British crowd even before they knew he was moving, but that definitely probably helps a lot.
And do you think maybe that's why they had to move the belt off him?
It's probably part of it. They probably feel like it's risky having to fly him in all the time and deal with all that from America to be the champion when Shibata, you know, Japan, not necessarily closer, but feels like more of a willing to fly in guy.
Yeah.
For Shibata as a star on New Japan, while you're kind of flying in an indie level talent to be your champion doesn't probably feel as good.
Yeah.
Even though we all think of Zack Sabre Jr. as a big deal, I mean,
yeah,
he works some pretty dingy shows, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of tough to be like, yeah, we'll pay for this gigantic plane flight to bring in this guy who is also going to work Martin Stone on an AWE show. And that's no disrespect.
Ouch.
Stone or AWE, but you know what I mean. It feels weird. They feel, as I said, it feels novel. The show was good from beginning to end, and it felt special. Some matches didn't obviously hit me right where they needed to, but hell, other people loved them a lot more than I did, so, you know, that is what it is. All in all, taking away from it, that's what I was going to say, is the show leaves me with a lot of questions, and that's obviously why I started kind of questioning you about it, because I don't even know how I feel about that stuff, so I just kind of wanted to talk it over, or at least hear what you had to say about it, because Shibata is your champion feels a little weird from a New Japan booking statement, from a wrestling in-ring statement, not at all. If I was going to pick a guy from New Japan to put my championship on, I'd pick Shibata too, because he's probably like one of my top three easily wrestlers in New Japan. It's tough because Kenny Omega is someone who I've been a fan of for so long, but if I'm going to put a heavyweight title on somebody, I probably would be putting it on Shibata before I'd be putting it on Omega. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. The show itself, thumbs up for sure. Check it out. Night 2, I'm hearing rave reviews as well. So if Night 2 compares to this or is even better than this, it's definitely another very, you know, kind of must-watchy type show. So all in all, I had a good time.
Cool. Anything you got to plug, man?
Match of the Week Club comes out pretty much the same day as this podcast now. So go check that out. We did Kurt Angle versus Cody Rhodes. or actually Cody without Brandi Rhodes, as it was on this show. And we also are now doing two matches, so it's Matches of the Week Club. We did Speedball Mike Bailey versus Higuchi for the DDT, or DNA, I guess technically, Grand Prix Finals, which was a fantastic match to me. I liked it a lot. Also doing Lucha Undead, just did an interview with Skill Crane. And we'll also have an episode of Top Beer coming up after you're listening to this. The other thing, as I said, ROH reviews over at Wrestling with Words. That's kind of becoming my new thing. So if you want the written companion to my review here, check that out there. And We Don't Know Wrestling. I was on with Quentin Moody and Tanner, so it also plays into the Match of the Week Club, as we're all members of the Match of the Week Club now, technically. Even though Quentin has never reviewed a match yet, he will, maybe. So we all did our We Don't Know Wrestling 100 list. We didn't really do our list, but we just kind of talked about guys who are going to make our list or guys who were thinking about where they belong on the list. It went pretty well. It was good stuff. And other than that, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
And follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh my perceptions of death.